I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the Dr. Supercoach podcast, once again powered by our partners at Code Sports. On with me to talk all things round 23. It is Pistol. My man, how you going there, champion?
I'm excited for, you know, the, I guess, end of the season.
excited for the end of the season? It's dragging on for you, is it?
Look, it is, and it has been, but more so that from a football perspective, the last 2 weeks are pretty much like every... There's so many teams that can make finals. It's basically like finals atmosphere. Every game is like an eight-point swing. It's huge. So that's what's really exciting. Supercoach somewhat less exciting, but I guess still exciting for those that are in their finals. I can't say I'm in too many of them.
Yeah. Speaking of eight-point games, you're going to see one this weekend in the Bombers and the Giants, mate. I'm glad you're watching it because I'm going to be behind the couch with my hands over my eyes.
No, it should be a lot of fun. Chizo, how did you go last week?
No. Let's not breeze past this. I want everyone to know the connections that my boy Pistol has in the AFL world.
None. Just can't announce it on the podcast, that's for sure.
All right. He's got secret inside free tickets, which is pretty cool. I went okay, Pistol. Nothing great, but I'm not falling off the face of the earth like I thought I would. 22.68, which wasn't fantastic. Obviously, I had a round rank in the 30,000s, but I'm down to 13.35. So the dream of a top 1K finish again is sort of fading as these premium injuries are starting to mount. But there's no donuts quite yet, Pistol. I've only got this week and next week to get through without having a donut, so we'll see how we go with that. How did you go?
Around the same. I have 23.17. Funnily enough, Chizo, I went up in rank 37 spots. My team continues to be the barometer for my rank.
How are you going up in ranks 6 weeks after you run out of trades? You were losing ground while you were making trades, and you're slowly
know.
Like 20 at a time going upwards.
It's quite bizarre. I have barely moved. I've complained about it for most of the week. Since like round six, I've changed like 600 spots. It's just my team just doesn't move. I'm in the same rank for the entire season. I thought I'd just fade away by now, given I'm holding Walsh and holding Dacos. And have terrible cover. Like, I've got Marek on field this week. I figured I don't have Sicily or Petrarca or Libba, which did help me. I don't have the top-end premiums, and I don't have cover, and I didn't have 23 premiums, and I'm not falling in rank yet, which, touch wood, I can just chill for the next 2 weeks at this exact same rank. I at this stage, I'd take a 2K finish. But if I slip past 3K, I mean, I was expecting that for the whole second half of the season, but bit of a nothing season for me, unfortunately, but I'm glad that you're on the cusp of the top 1K, and hopefully you can get there.
It's not going to happen, mate. Like, I'll put it into perspective for you. So started the year in 64,000 after round one. By round 10, I made my first appearance in the top 2K at 1,042. And so since round 10, which is like multiple months ago, I've gone from 10:42 to 13:35. Like I've literally, you want to talk about like in that time, my highest rank was 1547 and my lowest rank was 844th. Like that's a really narrow slice of the Supercoach rankings to be in there for multiple months and not go up or down.
Yeah. This is what happens, right? It's hard to make grounds when I guess everyone has one more trades and two, I guess DPP causes people to have very similar teams. Which is something I have complained about in the past. I'm going to try and keep my complaints to a minimum. But it does mean that the rank rises do become more difficult and you really need to, you know, nail those rookies, make more cash, have the 23 premiums, those sorts of points of differences to be able to move up. And it's not really, you know, the random POD player. It's more you get all of the good players and you don't miss any of them and then you move up in rank and that's your POD that you didn't miss any of them where other people have missed one or two and you gain generally on people you know through that or the extra premiums or extra cash. Those are the main ways. Otherwise you just sit at your rank and you stay there for the whole season and that's the game.
Stalling is the way that I like to describe it.
There we go. That's the season in a nutshell. Thanks for coming to my TED Talk.
mate, we do have a couple of donations to go through on the Cancer Council side of things. We've got two from Butler. Butler donating $12 to match the extra donation the Dirty Schneid says made above and beyond our bet. So Butler's ego was hurt there, and thanks for that, Dirty, for
Thank
convincing
you, Butler.
Him to do that.
That's very nice of you.
And then Butler, this is something we talked about a few weeks ago, Pistol, is the optimizer, you know, pay to win scenario. He had three donuts saved by having access to the optimizer. So he's donated for the three moral donuts that he would have got had he not had access to the special button because he pays for it.
That's very funny. And that's a clever way for doing a donation as well. So donate for moral donuts should be the tagline for next season.
Yeah, even when we don't go get any donuts, we go, oh, this guy, like Matty Roberts last week, oh, he came back and we didn't get a donut. But morally, we should donate.
Yeah, no, I love that. That's hilarious. Good job, Butler.
And the last donation we have here, Pistol, this was a hot topic within Slack. This was very contentious. There was a few bets placed on whether Ken Hinckley would keep his job for 2024 and beyond. And on the line was a $100 Cancer Council bet. And Damien on the losing side bet with JB that Ken Hinckley wouldn't sign. Damn, Koshy and Port, well played and money to a great cause. And taking a medicine and jumping into Slack and being like, boys, put my hand up, I guess wrong. And donating, and like some people don't have the inner wisdom to just be like, you know, stuff happens. Let's all move on. And I think it's a good pat on the back for Damien to jump back into Slack and make that donation. It was a long time coming, I think, after 10 wins in a row.
Absolutely, it was. I think you know, anyone who pays up their bets, no matter how ridiculous they may seem at the point in time. Sorry, Damien. I think they'd won like six or seven in a row when that bet was made. So
yeah,
it was a little bizarre. But appreciate paying up, as you said, all for a fantastic cause to the Cancer Council. So I know they appreciate it. So please feel free to make as many more bets as you like, especially ones like that.
It's actually a good thing that JB won that bet because he's notoriously for just letting it slide and forgetting that he had a bet placed from 6 months ago.
No, don't do JB like just, that on the podcast.
Just checking if he's listening. Because he doesn't.
No. I mean, love that you, part might be true. At least someone said something truthful.
We're into the last four in the Dr. Supercoach Cup. Very, very tight. So we've got Tim and Denny, they're 121st versus 21st overall in one of the prelims. And we've got Jimmy is 333 overall, and Ron, I want to say, is 240-something. So you've got to be inside the top 350 ranked overall to be in the final four of the Cup, which just shows
this
how competitive it is this year. And Pistol, We're down to the last 15 in the last coach standing, which has been going the entire season.
And we'll lose 10 more coaches this week. It is the hardest week of the whole season. And you don't need to be in the top 350 to make it. There is someone that is ranked 2600th that has survived all the cutting. I mean, look, everyone else is around in the top 500, but he has survived being ranked 2600 every week. So it just goes to show it's not about you, consistency. No, it's not me. It's about consistency.
It sounds like your rank.
It's not far from it. But yeah, it's about consistency rather than volatility of the side. And you can still win this major competition, which would be awesome.
Yeah. What other housekeeping, Pistol? I just want to let everyone know that's been playing along at home. I'm still locked out of Supercoach website on my desktop. Don't know what's going on there. I've cleared cookies. I've downloaded a brand new browser to try and get in there and find it. So I'm actually checking it on my phone as we do the podcast these days, which is a little bit of fun. But Pistol, I just wanted to have a whinge because I don't know what the hell's going on.
We will get into some Supercoach.
Hey, this is the first time we've made it to 10 minutes doing housekeeping, and I want to say at least 18 months. We are going to get into some Supercoach topics now.
Yep.
Pistol, it would be a little bit silly to be going through each scenario in terms of would we trade this guy, would we trade that guy. And the fact of the matter is only about 6 or 7% of the top 10K at the moment that have made a trade this week so far. So there's probably a few more with them up their sleeves. But I thought it would be a little bit more appropriate if we just went through the most commonly traded in players in the top 10K and just give our thoughts a little bit here. So number one, straight off the bat here, Pistol, the most traded in player of the top 5K is Clayton Oliver. Obviously, he's got incredible history of scoring. He was fantastic in the opening couple of months of the year. He's the number one trade-in option. And I said that to you pre-podcast and you balked at that idea.
Yeah, I think he'll get the Finn McGuinness tag. Is the type of player that would usually cop the Finn McGuinness tag. I know he said that last week about Liberatore, and Finn McGuinness did go straight to Liberatore until he got KO'd. Look, the difference, I think, is Clayton Oliver should still score decently. Like, I don't think he'll go like a big 120, but he can still get in the pep of the 100 mark, even with a tight tag, just because of, I guess, his accumulating nature. But you just need to think if that's going to be potentially knocking you out of your preliminary finals. It's not a really high upside pick this week. It might be for the following week. So, yes, I guess overall gameplay, two-week play, that might be fine, but if you are in finals, I would not trade Libba to Oliver just in case there's a exceptional fin tag. And Oliver hasn't played footy in a while, and that might be really rough. So it would be an avoid for me, I think. What about you?
Look, I'm definitely along the same lines, and I'm also interested to see Oliver's impact on Petrarca. Obviously, over the last couple of weeks, Petrarca's been playing a little bit more forward, but he started in the midfield on the weekend. If Oliver is getting the tag, you'd think that Petrarca would get a little bit more freedom. But we've seen in the past, or at least the start of the season, Petrarca's scoring is capped a little bit more when Oliver's in there as well. So I think there might be some coaches chasing the points last week in terms of the 128 that he scores against the Blues. And I think I agree that he's going to get the tag. But I also think that getting on Petrarca might also be a little bit of a trap as well, even though he's not getting the tag.
Yeah. No, I'm totally with you there, Chito.
Can we at least point out that we were 50-50 right? Can we have a stalemate handshake agreement that you said that Libba was going to get the tag by Finn McGuinness, and I said he was going to go to a half back. And once Libba got KO'd, then he did go to a half back instead of Bont. So we're sort of like, let's say 60-40 your way.
Well, that's a very generous split to you. I think maybe we can go.
Okay, I'll make it 50-50.
We'll go 90-10, I think, might be.
No, whoa. I was the 60.
Oh, come on. Get off it, Cheese.
You only got tagged for one quarter. I got three quarters correct. I was being generous.
Oh, no. That's definitely
Not fair?
I don't think the ruling would go in your favour if we were to take this further.
Okay, so that was and the most common trade-in for the top 5K as well is Libba to Clayton Oliver as well. So that's the direct one. Interestingly, only two of the top 10 trades most traded in the top five is Libba, and the other eight are Dacos. So obviously a few coaches still trading Dacos out of the top five, which probably explains the next most common trade in. At number two is Dan Houston Pistol. He's had a phenomenal season up until this point. What are your thoughts on him as the most frequently traded in defender?
I mean, I think he's a great pick. I don't know if I would say he's my number one option, but yep. If he's not number one, he's number two. Oh, actually, that's not true. Yep. He's in the top three. I think there's a fair case. I'm sure we'll talk about them because I'm sure they're in the other top 10. I don't know. But between Newman, Sicily, and Houston, they're all really good picks. And Houston's scoring in the latter half of this year has been unbelievable.
Yeah. Yeah. It's almost like JB called it 6 years ago. And then the only time it's relevant is when we can't trade him in because we've got no trades. Thanks for that, JB. But
that
third on the list is probably
nice
someone
thing
you want to. Third on the list of most commonly traded in is another Dacos move. It's Nick Newman. He was your call last week as someone that we should be looking to get in as well, and he went bang. And if we're looking at the top three five-round averages for defensive-eligible players, it's Houston, Newman, and Sicily in that order.
Yeah, I mean, he lived up to all of my expectations. He just has the old-school Doherty role. You know, he is the commander down back. They want the ball in his hands. His good kick, long kick, all the super coach points is, you know, that role commands a lot of points. I don't know where I was going with that sentence, getting a bit tired. But the Newman role is one I expect to stay for the next 2 weeks as well. So I would be totally comfortable trading him in. I think like Houston probably has a higher ceiling or definitely has a higher ceiling because we've seen that this year. So I totally understand why you pick him. It's close. I probably would. I feel like Newman's got a higher floor in this role. In the last 6 weeks, he's had a low of 92 and then 5 tons with the next lowest 106. I feel like that's what you're going to get, a low of 106 over the next two. Whereas Houston has put out some, you know, stinky 70s and 60s, but he's also had a ceiling of, you know, a 170. And anything can happen in those last 2 weeks. He's got two decent fixtures. So, yeah, it's just about, I guess, what position you're in overall and what position you're in the ladder is which one of those two you're going to take. But I don't think you'll regret either one.
Yeah. The only thing that – well, they've both got great fixtures. Houston has Frio and I've just forgotten who the other one is. Frio and Richmond. And Newman has Gold Coast and GWS. So they're both reasonably placed in terms of fixture runs. I guess Nick Newman's a little bit more role dependent, so there is like that outside chance that someone comes back and influences that, but it's a really slim chance, I think. And they're both equally placed in terms of teams picked in, so that they're both at about 5%. So there's not one that's going to be significantly more of a POD in the grand final or anything like that either. So I like that as well, Pistol. I think that's a good call. The fourth most traded in player of the top 5% is LDU. And this was JB actually put him up as a VC option the other week and he went bang to pretty much back him in and say, thanks for that, JB. You called me.
There we go. Another positive thing about JB. It's great. Look, LDU has an unreal fixture this week. He's in fantastic form. I would back him in for a big score this week against Richmond. We know he is one of the only big point scorers in his side, and I have no reason to expect that not to continue. The only bad thing I could possibly say about LDU at this stage is that next week against Gold Coast, we just saw Tuk Miller run with Goulden in a really, really tight checking tag. He followed him all the way to the bench at times in that first half. And I would be a little bit concerned that maybe LDU gets a took tag treatment. That was a triple T. And that might, I guess, cause me some concern. But at the end of the day, he's in his current form, he's almost untaggable. Like, he's just, yeah, a fantastic pick with a really high ceiling, with a high floor. I think this is potentially my midfielder of choice this week, I think, Chizo.
Midfielder of choice, you reckon?
Well, just, I guess, if my alternatives are Oliver and Petrarca, I think I'll take picking LDU.
No, I was just I was stalling until I could look up whether he got the Finn McGuinness tag in round 18, which he did not, because he has an average of 121.1 since his return from injury, which is literally the LDU that we were all predicting in the preseason, but for all the injuries and et cetera that he has been knocked around by. So he's literally had one sub-ton since he's come back from injury and has been phenomenal. So I actually really like him. Tuk is going to like give him a little bit of attention, but I think I'm less concerned about him getting attention from Tuk as like someone like a Goulden, like a hyper damaging player. I'm not sure that they're going to be as worrisome. I mean, like, they're also playing against the Swans for a shot at making it close to finals as well. So
yeah,
they were throwing everything they could against the Swans' damaging players. So I absolutely love the idea of LDU if you do have a trade like that too. Okay. Next pistol is Sicily. I think that sort of Sicily naturally sits third behind Houston and Newman in terms of these trades. So there's not a whole lot that we need to say. Unless you strongly disagree with him being an option on the way home?
No, I think he's a great option. I don't even know if I would say obviously the third. I think it's just really tight. I mean, in the last 4 weeks, had a 166 and a 171. So it's hard to, you know, he's got Melbourne this week, which I think will be a good matchup for him. Just in terms of like the ball being down there, as long as they don't put any attention on him, probably a good matchup if he's involved around Grundy. It seems like that's a high potentially scoring game. And then Fremantle, which is, I mean, that was his worst game of the whole year. I think he scored second worst game. He scored 63 against them earlier this year, but this time it's at the MCG. Hawthorn are in much better form. And as with Sicily, he can, on his day, he could score massive. So I think there's definitely a conversation we had about all three of them, but I probably do have him just third, only just. I wouldn't talk anyone out of it, let's put it that way.
No hindsight bias, because he absolutely ruined your captaincy 1 week. But we'll move on to number six in the list, which is Zach. Just a little drive-by. Zach Butters, number six, obviously has been phenomenal this year. We went into the season like tossing and turning between him and Rosie, and I think comfortably he's had the more explosive year. He seems to be the first option with forward eligibility that people are looking at, and he's probably still going to be placed in the midfield, if I had to guess, in terms of a Libba or a Dacos removal.
His last three games, 134, 137, 139, and now he plays Fremantle and Richmond. I mean, two really good fixtures. I know I said LDU is my midfielder of choice, which is true since Butters is my forward of choice, but Butters can play in the midfield.
You didn't consider Butters, did you? You're trying to save your skin now.
I forgot about it. But Butters is probably my player of choice. I mean, you get an injury risk any time he goes near the ball, given how hard he attacks the footy, but he wants to win the Brownlow. Like, he's going... Yep.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Be trying to get 3-vote performances in the next 2 weeks. I mean, everyone wants to win the Brownlow, but Butters could potentially do it, I guess, if he polls 6, and we'll see what happens with Bott. But, I think he's in great form. He's a great pick. He's fun to watch. He's got great fixtures. There's not much not to like there, Chiso.
Yeah, and just to kind of reiterate, I think we were not necessarily singing praises of going Rosie over Butters, but by round 7... Butters was still only averaging 96, and he's currently coming into this week's game with 111 average, which is phenomenal for those that either picked him up on the run or started him. Like, he's shown full faith and become the player that we always had anticipated that he would become, which is, you know, if you've got him, or you're looking at getting him, obviously a good option. Number 7 here, Pistol, we now get into the rucks. It's Luke Jackson. 50 trades of the top 5K this week. Are we still comfortable that Jackson is like one of the better options? Like, I know that he's still playing that number one ruck role, but I just thought that people were getting a little ahead of themselves if they were thinking that the 170s would continue. But going 173 and 124, like, I'm working hard to try and find some negatives here, mate, because a lot of these guys are absolute top notch options.
Yeah, no, look. Luke Jackson has a great fixture this week as well against Port Adelaide with their ruck woes. So I would expect him to have another big game. But look, last week we said it was a better pick because you get to play West Coast and then you get to play Port. So you get two really good games before you come up against big Ned Reeves, which I expect will be a tougher, more restrictive matchup for Jackson. He's not my number one forward option, probably number two, but I still think he's a good option. Across these 2 weeks, you're probably still getting, you know, a 115 odd average. So I think he's still a top pick this week.
Yeah. My only concern is that Hawthorn have been a little bit restrictive over the course of the year for rucks here and there. So there's that to consider in round 24. But again, not hugely important. As we get into the bottom of the top 10 here, Pistol, we'll go through a little bit quicker. We've got Luke Ryan at number 8. I think he's followed just outside the top 10 by Sinclair. Both of those guys are perfectly fine in terms of defensive options if you're unable to afford the likes of Sicily at 650 or Newman and Houston around the 600K.
They're fine. I guess, as you said, you'd only be doing it because you can't afford the better options.
Correct, yep.
Nothing really more to add.
Yep. And just to round out the top 10, we've got two mid-500K midfielders in Tom Green and Darcy Parrish, two injury-affected season primos for us. For me personally this year, Pistol, is both Green and Parrish. And look, I was planning on picking up Parrish after he came back from his injury because I did expect he was going to have a fine end to the year. Not like anything massive, but just that threat of injury lying over, like hanging over his head, is what scared me away.
He doesn't really look like at the moment being like a 150 ceiling guy. Kind of just looks like a consistent 115 sort of player.
Yeah.
And you know,
it's interesting.
Yeah. Do you think there's a reason, or it's just the way your midfield is now spread down at the Dons?
Yes.
They just have more options than they did before.
Yeah. Yep. I absolutely think some of the younger guys like Hobbsy and Caldwell are expanding a little bit more. Like, we've seen, I think, it was 2021, if I remember correctly, where he was hitting those 150 pluses and getting the Anzac Day medal and this and that medal and whatever. Whereas this year, he's got a 124, a bunch in the teens and low tons, a 131, 126, and a 122. He just doesn't have that ceiling like this year, like we've seen in previous years. And with that injury history on top, like if you've got enough cash to go a little bit higher than Parrish is probably what I'd be trying to get to if I could. As much as I love the guy and want him to have my babies, I'm not sure if I'd be bringing him back in again.
Yeah. Like, I'm not sure that he's a better pick than someone similarly priced like Newman.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, exactly.
Definitely would prefer butters. Not even close. So, yeah, I feel like similarly, Tom Green, I probably rate Tom Green a little bit higher than Parrish, just because of the form GWS are in and the form that he personally is in. You know, some really big scores in a row now for Tom Green.
Yeah.
But they do feel like not on the same tier as some of the other options that we've spoken about already.
Yeah. Pistol, that's rounding out the top 10 of the most commonly traded in premiums for the injured guys of the top 10K coaches. I'm going to let you have a little think here for a second. As someone that wasn't in the top 10 that you think it's worth considering, I'm going to throw one back at you. And so just give you some thinking time. Last three weeks, he's got a three-round average of 126. He's reasonably cheap. He's cheaper than Tom Green. He's cheaper than Darcy Parrish. He's cheaper than Sinclair. Maybe a little bit of love for Matty Crouch. Pistol. trying to get himself traded to... He tried again. Look, has he been in form? He's been averaging 50 touches in the sandful, and they finally unleashed him on the AFL, and he's just doing normal Matty Crouch things. Let's say you don't have you're scraping to try and find an option. He could be someone to consider. Very risky though. I like him outside the top 10.
That is far from the worst call I've heard. They've got
Sydney and West Coast to finish. He could go big.
West Coast, especially in the last round, in a game that is a must win for them.
He's a piggy. He could go 180.
I mean, maybe not 180, but I think there's very real chance that he puts out back-to-back 120s on the run home there. So, yeah, at his price, Chiso, that's a good one by you.
Mate, I got so close to doing the International Darts Championship 180 at the top of my lungs, and you're just lucky. I'm going to save that for when it happens, maybe the season review. Do you have someone out of the top 10 most commonly traded in players that you think is worth considering for guys out there?
Yes, I do. Thank you for asking.
Who would it be?
I just needed a little bit of a build up. I think,
Matt, I gave you 2 minutes. I stalled.
I was still looking. But yeah, I think if you're running much lower on cash, so so let's say sub 500 or trying to bank cash, you want to do an upgrade. I don't know what your situation is, man, but you just listen. This is the sneaky one.
Sub 500. I gotcha.
Jaden Short is playing back, literally back. And now Dan Rioli is missing. So last week he took the majority of kickouts for Richmond, which we know is, I guess, a big deal. He only played on from two of his four, but Saints barely missed. So there weren't many kickouts in total. There was only eight for the game. He took half of them. I think if you're... One, Jaden Short, who we've seen get, 40 touches off halfback before. Two, is playing North Melbourne, which is, a fantastic matchup. Although I don't know if he's going to get more kick-ins against North.
They're not going to kick any shots at goal.
Yeah, that is problematic. But he's just got upside at that price that I don't think many other players have. Maybe one other that I can think of off the top of my head. So I think he would be my sneaky cheapo. And I'll just finish off with the other sneaky cheapo under 500K down back. If you happen to have Dan Rioli, let's say, someone happens to have him and needs to trade him out. Hayden Young, Chiso, has been playing in the midfield. He had 81% CBAs last week. Looks really good. The last 2 weeks he's had really big CBA numbers and has gone 123 and 118. He probably gets the gig for the next fortnight. But that being said, he's versatile enough that he could be thrown around everywhere. So it feels like a worse pick than Short. But if you really want a moonshot, I think he's probably, a guy that no one else is thinking of trading in this week. So you could be on your own trading mean, and it might pay off.
And if you're strapped for cash and looking for a defensive option, I like both of those, mate. They're probably the two best defenders under 500K. the Finn that asked that question. Pistol, I've got one more little Supercoach topic that we're going to go through. So we had Steve Clark comment in podcast questions on Slack that he kept your preseason ranking order for the mid prices going into the preseason. And this was apparently, this has been fact-checked apparently. Number one, so start for number one, we've got Hopper, Yeo, Crozier, Jones, Bruin, Ash, Warple, Flanders, Stocker, Setterfield, Zeeble, Bowes, Fife, and Clark. And you want to know the first thing I notice on that? There's like maybe one guy on that list that we would have been happy to own this season in Jay-Z. And like, if we're contrasting 2023 to 2022, we're like, oh, it's the year of the mid prices. The Guns and Rookies is dead. Mid prices didn't do anything near a successful strategy this year, I don't think.
Yeah, it was awful. I mean, the list is a great reminder.
Really awful.
Like, it's a really good reminder of just like how hit and miss mid prices are. I mean, I look at that list and like, maybe Hopper gets a pass, but we know he got injured at an awkward time.
Annoying time.
Definitely Warple would get a pass, but you'd have to still hold him onto him long, and he was slow to make cash. I think Stocker, who I did own, was a great pick, so that one's a tick. Setterfield, I started with and made lots of money if you started with him. Didn't make lots of money if you traded him in after his first price rise.
He would have trapped a lot of people.
Yeah, and then got injured and still hasn't returned. And Jay-Z, we know, was really good until he wasn't. So it's not pretty. Yep. Like, we got, from this entire list, you got zero keepers.
It really makes
you think. Yeah, it makes you think about, you know, the previous year we were like, well, all the mid prices were awesome, let's get them all. And this year we got a bunch of them and it was quite awful. Like, it just didn't really work out. The preseason predictions, I mean, I assume that was for the discussion topic rather than the order. I don't know exactly how close to the season starting this list was made in order, especially because I started Stocker and Setterfield, who are like in the bottom two-thirds of this list. So my opinion clearly changed closer to lockout on some of them, but I think the overarching theme is that it's really hard to predict mid-price of breakouts. Like, even in quotation marks, like, the obvious ones aren't always good and always obvious. And also there's clearly a lot more risk than we gave, I guess, that we thought there would be in selecting them at the beginning of the season, because most of us loaded up and they were all bad. But geez, I'll put a little asterisk next to the conversation, because if you remember at the beginning of the year, it wasn't entirely, well, it actually was, but I'll come back to it. It wasn't entirely viable at round one to go full Guns and Rookies because there weren't enough rookies that were playing.
Yeah,
so you had to split a premium into two mid prices. So you're forced to take two and hope that they weren't terrible. And that's kind of where we were at, where we're just like, look, we can't quite get all of the premiums. I know we want to, but let's just drop off our least preferred one and then get mid prices to fill it out. It ended up being okay if you end up starting people like Chandler and playing him on field, and that worked out. But it's not something I would recommend. And even if I was like looking back in the season, I would never have done that. Like, there's just no way I'd recommend to anyone to have started Chandler as your F6 and build your team around that.
Correct.
And I don't think it's a lesson learned. Like, oh yeah, we should be putting rookies that we're not sure about their job security and scoring potential and be playing them all on field and everything will turn out all right. I don't know if that's the right lesson. You can only play with, you know, the playing players are the name. So it's not a super straightforward comparison of like, were mid prices good or bad? I don't think the answer is not as well-defined as you may think just by hearing the question or reading it on paper.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think when the second thing that I pick up when I'm looking at this list, the ones that you would call quote-unquote successful were not necessarily the guys like Setterfield that were like averaging 100 for a period of time. Warple was like a best 22 locked into that midfield type player, and he's only averaging 90 91 at the end of round 22. So it hasn't been great, but that return has given me like has been far and away better than a lot of this list. The same sort of goes for Lockie Ash and Stocker in terms of having the job security, not averaging the crazy numbers to like make a huge amount of cash, but you're not forced to play that rookie on field like you're talking about. You're picking someone that has upside and job security rather than trying to like Jay-Z going from like 300K to 600K again, like he did a couple of years previously. Like there's no one other than that that really stands out from this mid-pricer list that even borderline became capable at any stage during the season. And the ones that have failed that are on this list were the ones like Flanders who we were querying the job security. The same goes for like Tanner Bruin. And then the injury histories to Yo, Fife, Clark, etc., proved to be exactly what we have always said, that injury history is a thing that you need to take into consideration. It's sometimes you can get a little bit too clever for yourself, and I was definitely like that in the preseason. And this is almost, I don't want to say it's a definitive proof of anything, because it's just all it is a couple of data points. But I definitely think that I overcorrected based on last year, where I played a high amount of trades, but I played the low amount of trades way. And then this season I played very much like AFL Fantasy and just said, my trades are infinite, just bang, 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 bang. And all I did was trade from one problem to another problem with a bunch of these guys. So a few interesting takeaways there for me, that hopefully having those two years that are basically like polar opposites back-to-back in terms of our mid prices with this new format that we have, I think is going to hold us in good stead for 2024.
Yeah, I find that really interesting what you said. Like the more proven commodities were the ones that seemingly were more successful. It wasn't the like young breakout players. I guess Owens isn't on the list because we weren't thinking about him in the preseason, who was like a breakaway player that's done well, but he's fallen off lately anyway. But it's the guys that were known commodities who had already previously scored well in the past, either who are old and injury prone or young and injury prone. They were the guys that were more successful for the most part than the young and up and coming guys who nearly all flopped. Yeah. But when I go through, I guess, the risks associated with the mid prices, which was a big talking point in the preseason, it was like all about your risk tolerance. If I go through them one by one, which I might just do for fun, Chizo, very, very quickly.
Yeah, do it.
Nearly all of the risks, I guess we'll say, came off in the worst way. Like they were risky and then flopped because of that specific risk that we knew about in advance. Hopper is injury prone and he got injured. Yo is injury prone and he got injured. Crozier had these bad health risks and then also job security risks and then wasn't picked for round one. So that's problematic. Jones being old, not playing for multiple years, we're worried about his scoring potential and or his injury risk, and he was injured and scoring potential was problematic. Bruin, we were worried about him if he was going to be best 22 or not. And then, I mean, that was the risk and then he wasn't. Ash probably gets a pass. Warple will get a pass. Flanders, we were worried about his role in the side. His role in the side was bad and then he was dropped. Stocker was a pass. Setterfield, look, I'll probably give Setterfield a pass because we weren't picking him because of injury risk. We're picking him because of his role and it was worrying what role he'd have, but his role was good. So that he probably gets a pass. I think that's an unlucky injury. Jay-Z, people didn't want to pick him because of injury risk and he was suffering and became the sub, you know, being old man risk. Bose, job security ends up being the issue, which is what I thought. Fife, injury risk. Fife got injured. And Clark, there was a mix between scoring potential and injury risk, and both of those were true. So pretty much all of the times where we said, like, this is the risk and, you know, you can take it or you can risk it, nearly every time you risked it, you lost.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Like, just the complete opposite of the previous year, where pretty much more you were rewarded for every risk.
Everyone became keepers.
Yeah.
Literally everyone became a keeper.
It's quite crazy, but it's a great, like a super fantastic question that I really appreciate you asking, Steve, because it makes you think about it. We had the great discussion about it and really highlights to me that, you know, when we got to take it seriously when we say, look, like, hey, like, I think we're very quick to be like, oh, it's an injury risk, but like he's going to go 90 and make 150K, so it's fine. And then they all got injured in like round 5 and 6 and didn't make 150K, yeah. And it wasn't fine.
Isn't it funny that we put that PDF out in the preseason? It was like 10 pages on the different types of risks that you should take into consideration, and all I did was load up on risk and blow my team to shreds.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And yeah. I will definitely be thinking about this when I'm choosing my team going into round one next year, I think.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mate, the last talking topic that we do have here, it's just something that I want to, well, you wanted to make people aware of, is that VC loopholing this week is actually going to be quite difficult. And that has taken, it's in full show on JB's round 23 captaincy video over on YouTube. With a few questioning why Laird was his preferred VC over the likes of Marshall. And it's literally because there's going to be coaches out there that just don't have a loopholing potential option. Because like Madden and stuff play earlier than Marshall and English, so you can't even do the two rucks into each other.
Or Laird. Can't even do him.
Yeah.
No, pretty much my entire bench being... you know, like Banks, Constable,
useless.
Dacos, Walsh, Wardlaw, Roberts, Drury. Outside of Roberts, who plays on Saturday night, everybody plays in the first three games. So yep. I'm forced to pick my VC pretty much on the Friday night. So I don't have any choices for my VC, which I only noticed tonight. So that's unfortunate. Yeah. And I think it might catch some other people out that some VCs sound great this week, and I'd love to do Laird or Roel Marshall, but I can't. So
yep,
there's that. Just wanted to make people aware.
Yep. And if you're clever enough to get, is it Diwa from West Coast Eagles as a DPP forward and defensive option to use with Sheasel, like the clever coaches that we are, Pistol, you do have a loopholing option.
There we go. Awesome. Well, thanks for having me this week, Chiso.
No worries, mate. Glad to have you on. The penultimate episode is down for 2023. We've cracked through 300 total public episodes as well, and that's about half as many DDDs as we've done over the years. Pistol, I think we're nearing the four figures of those. Thanks to everyone that has listened. You can find us on all the socials. You know where to find us by now. We'll catch you all in the next episode of the Dr. Supercoach Podcast.